It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Have you or someone you know left the behavioral health field? Coming back has its benefits for you and Ohioans in need. We would love to have you back working at a community behavioral health center, and you could earn up to a $3,000 bonus. That's right, a $3,000 bonus. Visit mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback and restart your journey today. That's mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback.
Welcome to the Everyday Warrior Podcast, guys. I'm your host, Mike Cirelli. We've got a great one today. We've got Owen Franks, and I've been looking forward to this one. I know John Wellborn, who you're sporting his logo there, connected us, and he said, hey, would you be interested in interviewing Owen Franks? I'm like, yeah, without a doubt, dude. Just obsessed with one, rugby. No offense to American football, and John would take this harshly, but you guys don't wear helmets, you don't wear pads. That's a man sport, man. And I don't know how anyone plays for as long as you played to date, because you just finished up the 2024 season with the Crusaders. Is that correct, or are you guys still
yeah, that's season? Right. No, I retired 3 months ago. Switched straight into a coaching role, but. Yeah, started when I was 5 years old, really, you know, as a kid in New Zealand. You grow up with a rugby ball in your hand, really. Playing on the weekends, bare feet on the grass. So, yeah, it's been a long time, but, I was ready for it finished by the end.
Do you guys play just as brutally as kids as you do in the adult leagues?
It's interesting watching because my sons are playing now. My oldest one is 9, and... it's actually awesome to see. You fall in love with rugby again when you watch the younger kids because you see everything that's good about it. You know, they play a tough game. You see them rally around each other. You know, there's really good team spirit. It's really physical. So you see kids get hurt. You know, they might be on the ground crying and the mum goes to run on and then you get a dad saying, no, leave them. Let them get up. And so it's just awesome seeing those things that build resilience in young kids. And it is physical, but I think kids, you know, at that age, they're so pliable, you know, they can get bent in half and, you know, because they're flexible and, well, they don't care really. They just get up and get on with it. So, it's really enjoyable to sort of fall in love with rugby again from the amateur side of things.
I do want to dive into your life story, but have concussions come to the forefront like it has with American football?
They have, but like anything in the media, it gets sensationalized and, you know, it's only the negative aspect of it. And you know, like if you were to weigh up all the positives and the negatives, that would far outweigh the risk that you get from concussion. And it's a tricky one because I've seen guys who have taken, you know, lots of head knocks, you know, they've been concussed, or, you know, they've been fully knocked out on the field for a couple of minutes and, you know, that's happened repeatedly to them and they've got no problems. But then there's other guys who, you know, seem to take innocuous head knocks, but it affects them more. So there's something there. I'm not sure. And I think also lifestyle plays a big part of it. You know, rugby, there's a decent drinking culture. And, you know, if you get a head knock and then you down 10 beers and do whatever else, then it's not going to be, you know, good for you for your symptoms and, you know, how you're sleeping, your nutrition, and obviously there's a rabbit hole there. It's a shame for me seeing the negative light of it and some former players come out and, you know, try to get their money from the game, but it's far out. You know what you sign up for, so that's kind of my thoughts on it, really.
Yeah, it's... you know, I'm sure despite all the injuries you have, you'd do it all again if you could, knowing you'd end up in the same place.
100%.
It's better to have lived than to have just played it. It's safe, you know.
Yeah.
My skin is weathered. It's because I've been under a thousand sunny days. If my knees are you know, going, it's because I've climbed countless mountains, and I'd rather say that than getting to the end of life and just looking back with just total regret, man.
100%.
So I had to look this up. Your place of birth, and I don't even want to butcher your hometown. It's Motueka?
Yeah, Motueka. Yep.
Motueka?
Yep.
Big city, small town. I know you have a brother, Ben. I don't know if you had additional brothers. I know Ben was a pro rugby player alongside you.
Yeah, he's my older brother, 4 years older than me, and a younger sister. Motueka, it's a small town, top of the South Island there. It's an interesting place. It gets the most sun out of all of New Zealand. It's a beautiful place, and it's an interesting melting pot. You know, it's like there's a port there, so a lot of fishermen, a lot of orchards, orchard workers. There's a real range of people, from hippies to friggin', you know, there's fishermen, there's tobacco, kind of farms there. So it was a wicked place to grow up, you know, lots of rivers, beaches. Just a wicked place to grow up for a kid. Rugby on the weekends. We moved to Christchurch, which is a bigger town in the South Island, when I was 9 or 10. My dad started fishing out of Littleton there. And, I was gutted when we moved to the big city. I was like, man, this sucks compared to,
no problem.
To where we just come from. Yeah, but...
3-year-old dad was a fisherman.
Dad was a fisherman. He grew up on trawlers from the age of 16. He then went into the Australian Navy. His family moved over there. As a teenager, I think he was. He was a submariner. And then he went back to fishing post that. But he's an interesting man. He's you know, without him, me and my brother wouldn't have got anywhere close to where we are. He sort of guided us through, and rugby was a common interest for us. And, you know, when we were younger, he sort of guided us on the path of, you know, we obviously had dreams to be an All Black like every other New Zealand boy. And as we got older, he helped us, I suppose, focus us on what it would take to become a professional. And, you know, he really had no background in, you know, coaching rugby or training, but, you know, he would research programs online. We would do American Football College workouts that he had downloaded off the internet for a linebacker. And we would do those in the off season. And we had a real mentality that when, you know, everyone was doing their holidays, school holidays, would be training getting ready for the next rugby season, trying to realize our goals. So very lucky.
So my grandfather was a fisherman. Hard man. Especially the waters off of New Zealand, that can be rough. That's a rough career. So I admit that he was a hard, disciplined guy. Hell, dude, I remember, you know, the stories my mom used to tell me about him getting up at like 4 a.m. every single day to hit the sea early. It's insane.
We just had just awesome perspective, you know, because that was one thing he instilled to us from a young age. It's like, look, you guys aren't the most talented, but you know, if you have a really good work ethic, you'll eventually take over these guys that are ahead of you now. And like you said, you know, he'd go away 2-3 weeks fishing, and you know, there's days there where there's no rest. You know, he's manning the wheelhouse the whole day. And, you know, he's a very humble guy. He wouldn't share too much, you know, but I remember actually one day I was at school, and when we got taken home, me and my brother, because Dad had been helicoptered off the boat. The line had got almost a bit like that movie, Perfect Catch. The hook got caught in his arm, and he got dragged overboard. Luckily, someone caught him, but the hook ripped all the way through his hand, up through his bicep and through his shoulder. But that was no big deal to him, you know. I remember him being at work pretty quick again. And yeah, he's yeah, very quiet guy, quiet family, but
yeah, let a lot from for sure.
So, you know, you won. You're 6'1". You weigh in usually around 270. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Did I mean? I know with John Wellborn, you're part of the Power Athlete family. You're big into lifting and overall physical fitness. When did you guys start? When did you and your brother start hitting the weights? Was it pretty young?
No, it was about 14. Yeah. So Dad had us down the park from a young age, so in sprints and just general training. But 14, he brought us our first gym membership, and we would go to the gym. We were really lucky to meet a trainer, Lee Attrell, who was an Olympic weightlifting guy. He'd gone to the Commonwealth Games for New Zealand at the local YMCA. So we started there with him when we were 14 and sort of progressed from there.
Yep. Is that where you started to put on the size? What'd you got? Started with the
Olympics. I wouldn't say size. Look, man, when I think back, me and my brother were really lucky to meet the right people at the right time in terms of mentors and coaches. And so Lee at that time, he was really, really anal on technique before anything else. One of the first weight sessions, me and my brother, we spent probably a good hour just squatting set after set, only with the bar. But, it would be good. Perfect. No, do it again. Just simple cues around nailing perfection. So we really did our time first before adding weight.
Right.
Built a good base. I'd say probably around 18, 19, we'll start to lift some pretty decent weights. But no, there was a period of years there where it was just technique and learning the movements and putting in the time.
Do you think that's the biggest mistake that a lot of younger athletes make is they go right into lifting weights rather than focusing on form and technique?
Yeah, I think that's a mistake anyone can make is, jump into the end goal first. You've got to put in your time of building your base, learning the technique, so you can then, get the benefit from it. If I think of it from a sport perspective, for me and my position, it was very technical, and having that same mindset of the gym, of nailing technique, going through a process, executing, then transferred to the field for me. Whereas I've seen guys who, wow, this guy can squat 300 and, you watch it and it's ugly. Where, it doesn't transfer onto the field because it's hard to explain. Kind of like not in control, just everything with just raw power, but forgetting the technique and the process behind it.
Was that one of the advantages, I think, that you and your brother had is, again, these mentors you had along the way that created these programs from your father to this Olympic lift coach? Did that set you up for success and longevity in terms of, physicality and just injury prevention?
Yeah, for sure. And then I think of another coach we met, a guy, Warren Thin. He was actually a really famous bodybuilder in New Zealand, one of the most successful. But he was awesome for us at that time because he had been through the whole, he had abused steroids and, he'd actually had a kidney transplant. So he'd been through the other side. So he was totally the other way in terms of, look, guys, stay away from this. This is the food you need to eat. You don't need all that other shit. But he also had a wicked, again, just another guy who was big on work ethic and pushing your body hard. And actually have a real respect for bodybuilding because, how you've got to exhaust the muscle and then move on to a next one. It's actually bloody hard training. So they were some of the hardest pre-seasons we did with Warren. But for us at that time, he was perfect. And he was very ahead of his game as well. Stuff he was telling us to do then has now been, was normal. And one example is like a game day primer, weight session where you go in, just to feel sharp, you do some squats explosively, some jumps, things like that. Me and my brother were doing that early on in our career. And, guys were calling us meatheads and, why are you touching a barbell on game day? And, that was from Warren. And now it's been backed up by science and all that sort of stuff.
When you guys were growing up, well, I mean, was it just laser focused on rugby? I mean, how did school play into was it you guys did well in school, you just maintained, you knew where you and your brother were going, you were focused on that?
No, I didn't do well in school. It's a bit of a regret, really, because, you know, the attitude we had to rugby and things outside and training were, like, up here, and school was just an afterthought, to be honest. I was there really to eat my lunch, go to the gym in the morning, and then look forward to training in the afternoon. And the amount of times I got told by teachers, you know, well, you're going to be sorry you're putting all your eggs in one basket and you're not doing this. And they were right, really. But,
well, who's laughing now?
I mean, who's laughing
right
now?
They were right.
Yeah. Did work. I was just so, for me, there was no other option. You know, I think me and my brother, we enjoyed, I think we always had a bailout option. We were like, if rugby doesn't work out, maybe the army or the police, you know, something physical along those lines. But it was, there was certainly no other option for us.
It's almost you can only truly be good at one thing. What are you willing to sacrifice for that?
Yeah.
And I think a common thread amongst a lot of high performers is they didn't do well in school as a young man or a young woman. I'm sure you and your brother got into a lot of trouble with access to beaches and orchards and things like that. But no, it sounds like they work right on this one, and you guys proved them wrong. What was it like when you got your shot for the All Blacks in 2009?
It was awesome. It's a dream come true, obviously, but it moves by very quick. You know, you're there, and you don't want the opportunity to pass by. Well, I certainly didn't. And when I look back, I was pretty arrogant at that age. You know, I trained for a long time. I knew I was ready for that level. So, you know, through the years, I'd see guys come through, and you could see they were a bit intimidated by the environment. You know, they felt the pressure of the moment, and they didn't put their best foot forward. But for me, I almost had the opposite mindset. It was like, I shouldn't really be here from where I'm from and what sort of athlete I am. And, you know, I just really don't give a shit. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to try to smash people and scrum really well. And that was the mentality I had, and it paid off for me. I was sort of oblivious to the hype around it. The All Blacks, I was just like, this is where I belong, and really just took my opportunity with both hands.
Yeah. No kidding, because I was going to ask you if you were sort of overwhelmed stepping on the field for players you've been watching for years, and probably respected in a lot of ways. I think for most human beings, 99% of human beings, they'd be like, oh shit, do I belong here?
Yeah, I think I've always been someone who's, you know, I've drawn a lot of motivation from but, you know, I'd watch a lot of, like, the NFL hardest hits and things like that. And, you know, I would never trash talk like they do in America, but I love the mentality of, you know, what you've been in the league for so long, well, fuck you, I'm going to try smash you, and that's how I earn my stripes. And that was the mentality I had, you know. I'd come up against guys I'd grew up watching, but I wouldn't talk shit, but I'd get in their face, and I was like, man, if I dominate this guy I've been watching, and that puts me a step up on the ladder, you know. That was my mentality.
So you did follow the NFL when you were younger?
Yeah. Yep. No, I love the NFL. My dad actually went over to LA. He was working for electrical engineer. He would basically test products and try to break them and then tell them how to fix them. But he went to LA and he went to Oakland Raiders game. So he brought me back a bunch of Raiders T-shirts, me and my brother. I knew nothing about the NFL, but then did some research on the Raiders. And I really loved the, you know, especially through the 80s, 90s and 2000s, their attitude of, you know, kicking ass and taking names, really, and not necessarily being the nicest guys, well, the best guys off the field, but on the field they were going to, going to smash and try to dominate. And I really loved it. I love stories like that. And, you know, so I'd watch documentaries and, yeah, took bits and pieces where I could.
What, you know, you're talking to a 49ers, San Francisco 49ers. We like the Oakland Raiders. I find that very funny. Their fans, fans are known for being obnoxious. In your perspective, what are the similarities between the NFL and professional rugby at your level? I mean, whether it's strength, it's conditioning, what are the things you found that parallel?
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details. Save big money
at Menards. Have you or someone you know left the behavioral health field? Coming back has its benefits for you and Ohioans in need. We would love to have you back working at a community behavioral health center, and you could earn up to a $3,000 bonus. That's right, a $3,000 bonus. Visit mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback and restart your journey today. That's mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details. Save big money at Menards.
It's hard to say because I don't, I've obviously never experienced the NFL. I can only say from what I've seen, but I think the physical aspect, the thing I love about the NFL is they celebrate the physicality, you know, big hits, like I said, a bit of the trash talking, but the nature of physically trying to dominate an opponent. And I think that's why I love rugby. And, you know, whether you like it or not, people watch the game, they love seeing people get dominated, get hurt, and I think they love it because you know, they know to get to that top level it takes a certain amount of resilience and getting through injuries and things of that nature, but it is entertainment as well, and you know, I love that part of it as well. I love, you know, there's no doubt that when you play in front of 60,000-70,000 people and above, it gives you an extra arm and a leg, you know, as opposed to playing club rugby where, you know, you've got 30 people on the sideline. It is important to, I think, cut your teeth through that, but to get to that top level where there's the entertainment factor, there's hype, you know, putting it all on the line on Saturday or Sunday is what excited me.
Well, I've got to assume some of the crowds you played in front of, especially in the World Rugby Finals, had to be upwards of 70 to 100,000. I know it's dependent on the stadium, but rugby is a much more followed sport than the NFL worldwide.
International, yeah, like our domestic club season, you know, probably around the 20, 30,000. But the big games, the big test matches, we played one in South Africa, Johannesburg, was above 100,000. Most of the test matches around that 70, 80, depending on where you play. But, yeah, right. it's a surreal experience. Yeah.
That's massive. Do you miss that experience?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, fuck yeah. I definitely did. Those really big games, they were the ones, you know, you're obviously nervous to perform, but those ones I hit it, never had no problem, you know, walking out the tunnel for those big, big games. That was the most exciting for me. The challenge was, as you played more and more games and got further along through your career, was probably the club games where, you know, you didn't have the same crowds. The hype around the game wasn't the same. That's when I think your habits and your discipline really come to the front as a professional rugby player. Because for me, those big games, they were like, yep, this is where I belong. There's no need for there's no need for any external motivation to get me up for this game. This is what it's about.
So before we get into the culture of the All Blacks, for which, again, I don't know if you guys on the team were a fan of James Kerr's book, but that was a massive New York Times bestseller here. The book is called Legacy, yep. And it dove yep. into the All Blacks. But I've got to ask, because there isn't a human being that doesn't watch you guys perform the haka, which I know is a Maori tradition. Is that something that, I mean, the entire team took seriously? When you guys did that, did you get riled up? Did you know it was game on?
Yeah, for sure. No, everyone took it seriously. It depends your background as well. Like if you're a Māori, obviously you're going to have a deeper connection to it because it's part of your lineage. You know, I'm a New Zealand European, so I don't know when my ancestors came over from England or wherever they come from in Europe, but yeah, but there's that respect there. You know, there's the New Zealand Land Wars where they fought against each other. They signed a treaty, New Zealand Treaty of Waitangi, it's called. So, you know, both these cultures came together and forged this land, and that's something to be proud of. So for me, when I was doing it, it was just about respecting it and doing it properly. To be honest, it wasn't something that really fired me up. It was more, I'm going to do it properly, and I just want to, for me, I was just, man, I just want to get to the start. When you're an hour out from doing something that you're really nervous about, you're just like, okay, I'm just going through the motions here. Checking my fucking, crossing my T's and dotting my I's. I'm just waiting to get there. For me, even the haka was that, I wouldn't get too crazy, but some people would, you know. It was important for them to give it 100%, but for them to get ready for the game.
Yeah, as we say, get past the pomp and circumstance and let's get to smashing people as you for a few options. So I've got going through a few of these lessons, because this is invaluable for anyone listening who is trying to build an elite team, which you guys, I mean, you have the highest winning percentage of any professional team. I mean, mental toughness, grit, discipline, you guys have created a culture that just, let's be honest, can't be freaking replicated. But if somebody can try to implement one of these 15 principles, so I'm going to start and just go through these, and I want to hear it from the guy who actually lived it. And I love this. Sweep the sheds. Never too big to do small things that need to be done.
Yeah, I'll just rattle off personal experiences when I think of that. But for us, that was, you know, some rugby teams or I suppose professional teams in general, you'd get to the hotel and someone would come offload the bags. And you can think about a traveling rugby team, the amount of gear that you travel with you because you're essentially a traveling roadshow. But it was important that for us, the whole group did all that. So you would have a luggage and a gear truck traveling behind you, two or three of them sometimes. But it was the whole team would pitch in and, you know, form a line from those trucks straight into the hotel like a line. So that's one simple example. Management would be on that as well. You know, you got the head coach who's, 60 years old and he's in there as well. Obviously sweeping the sheds. We just never wanted to leave any ammunition to the opposition, you know, these guys came here and, you know, they won, but they left the championship like a fucking garbage slot. We're going to leave it spotless, win or lose. That's our standard.
Dude, I love this one. Go for the gap when you're at the top of your game, change your game. That one just, it probably doesn't resonate with a lot of people because if you're at the top of the game, what's the need for evolution or change?
Yep. Yes, and for me, that was especially the period from 2011 through to 2015 where we had won the World Cup. It was a bit of a monkey off the back because it had been a long period of World Cup failures. And I think the team had really gelled well together and we just took it to another level. And, you know, we would win games sometimes by 30 points, but our reviews on a Monday would be, that would be brutal. You know, regardless of the result, it was what could have we done better? And the accountability to perfecting your skill set, you know, you'd think like a top team that would have elaborate game plans and, you know, special moves, but it was just really the fundamental skills done really well under pressure. And it's the way we would train, you know, like perfecting really simple skills, and then we'd build that up, do it under pressure, put ourselves in scenarios that we'd face on the field. And, like I said, always looking to evolve. And no one was above the team in that respect, you know. Like our captain would get called out in those reviews just as much as, you know, the new guy.
Let me dive into that, because I think with society we're trying to create these cultures that it's everyone gets to feel good. You just said it would be brutal and anyone could be called out. I mean, was it candid and direct? Like, hey, you screwed up right here. You're not holding the standard. And would it get pretty heated?
No, it would. It was direct, but it was also funny, you know. I remember me and my brother would laugh with, like, this is either going to be the funniest meeting of our life or the worst, because, you know, if it was someone else, it would be, you know, it's like the school teacher telling someone off. You try not to laugh. And, yeah, our coach at the time, Steve Hansen, he had a good sense of humour. Like, he had a way of being cutting and direct, but also adding a bit of humour to it. You know, like, we had a guy at the time, Bowden Barrett, who was a really talented athlete, and he was playing fucking awesome. And he'll call them golden balls, you know, golden balls. It was direct. I remember a couple of times being told, look, you do that again, Frank, so you're going to be in a tracksuit next week, which meant you're sitting in the stands. You know, so it didn't have to be this whole breakdown of the skill and this is where you fucked up. It was just, don't do that again in front of the whole team. But everyone was into it together, so I think it bound the team tighter, because everyone was in the same boat, you know. I was getting it, someone else was getting it, and I think we all learnt each other's lessons, because when you were watching someone else, you're also thinking in your head, fuck, I better not do that as well, because I don't want to be called out like this in the meeting next week. So so everyone's learning.
I like this one, man. No dickheads. Follow the spearhead.
Yeah, I think, I think just any high performance, you'll know better than anyone, any high performing environment where your character gets shown in the spotlight, really. And, you know, a group like ours where it was very, it was self-led. So if there was any dickheads there, they'll just get found out very quickly. And, you know, rugby, that can be quite brutal environments, you know, male, you know, all men. And if you've got a character flaw that's shit for the team, then people will just take the piss out of you, really, until you leave or the coach drops you. Or so, yeah, it sorts itself out. You know, I've been in teams where, you know, they've let that stuff slide, you know, scummy behavior in the background, and it just infects the team. But no, at that level, it was, yeah, the cream rises to the top. And if you weren't part of it, then you're out pretty quick.
Another one is keep a blue head, control your attention. What's that about?
Yeah, that was from, like I said, the All Blacks had a lot of World Cup failures. The best team in the cycles before the World Cup and get to the World Cup and would sort of find a way to lose, really. And they brought in a guy, Kerry Evans, who was a forensic psychologist. And he really brought in this whole blue head, red head thing. So it wasn't a passive or a blue head for us wasn't passive. It was just clear thinking and totally deliberate and cold blooded. That's it, around what you were doing, versus red head, which was emotional. And, you know, you let your emotions get the best of you and give away a penalty or, you know, a cheap shot or whatever. But he explained it as, you know, because he was a forensic psychologist, that he wasn't scared of the guy who had done a crime of passion, you know, a murder or whatever. He was scared of the guy who was calculated, who had spent, you know, weeks planning, you know, it sounds horrible, but fucking planning something horrible. But he had done it with meticulous focus and no emotion. And that was the analogy we sort of took to and tried to apply it to the rugby field.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Sacrifice. Find something you're willing to die for and give your life to it. I'm assuming everyone on the All Blacks, that was mandatory.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, well, it's hard to say willing to die for, you know, because it's not the world where you come from where that's an actual consequence. But I think when you're putting your body on the line and a physical standpoint, you do have to have a certain amount of, I've got to sacrifice my body for what we're doing. And I think, look, like New Zealand, everyone, most kids, I'm going to say 90% of boys grow up, and girls now because they've got the girls, the women's team, grow up to be All Blacks. And as you get closer to it, then you're in the environment, yeah, you will do about anything to stay there. And, you know, when you're out of it, you realize pretty quick, you're like, fuck, you know, what I'd give to get back in this.
There's a, and I know this is deep to the culture, but finishing up here on the last two, be a good ancestor, plant trees you'll never see.
Yeah, for me, that's a saying I heard more that I think that applies is leave the jersey in a better place than you found it. So, you know, regardless of whether you're, you know, not everyone can be a great All Black. I'm not calling myself one for sure. I was lucky to be a part of a generation of great players. But it was very much, you know, whatever your part is, do it to the best of your ability and leave the jersey in a better place. And if it's not on the field, it's off the field, it's helping your teammate. You know, but there's a great legacy before us of All Blacks, and you want to make sure that the next person who picks it up, that you've added something to that so they can then, you know, pick their jersey up and add something to it as well.
And then lastly, it's write your legacy. I know within the book they talk about you're given a leather-bound book with the history of the All Blacks and then pages in the back for you to write your own legacy. I'm assuming that story is true. Each new guy gets that leather-bound book as they join the team.
Yeah, you do. Yep, it's a leather-bound book. It's got the history of the All Blacks, like a brief one through. Yeah. The All Blacks have been around for over 100 years, so there's all this wicked history of, you know, through both world wars, all these world events, and there's all these wicked stories. So they have bits and pieces out of that, and then they have, at the end of the book, they have your picture with, you know, you and your black jersey, and then they have a bunch of blank pages. And I remember when I was younger, I'd write little notes about the game that sort of fell off a bit near the end, but it's away somewhere. But yeah, it's another special thing that around being in the All Blacks. That's pretty cool.
Well, dude, from the outside looking in, I'm envious of you for just the experience you've got to live, not only with the All Blacks, but across your entire rugby career. I know you've said you're transitioning to a coaching role. There's a point at which the body just doesn't operate like a young 20, young 30-year-old anymore. Is this where you intend to go, to stay in the sport and be a coach?
Yeah, firstly, to touch on that first point, yeah, you see, you've got a lot of respect for the culture. With that, through that period, we actually had a lot of, We had posters on the wall of high performance, and one of those posters was of special operators. And, you know, we drew a lot of inspiration for people at the highest level who were doing work with a huge amount of, a huge amount on the line. So, you know, we had Willie Appiah, who joined us for both World Cups, actually, who's Victoria Cross recipient for New Zealand. And that was wicked having him around, because he would just share wicked bits of perspective from his background. You know, I remember him coming in for a meeting one day on game day. He could sense everyone was a bit nervous. And, you know, he read the room really well. He's like, I can sense a bit of, you know, nerves in the air. And he's, let me tell you a story. And he told us a story around one of his experiences in Afghanistan. It was wicked having someone there with that perspective, you know, gave us a lot of lift. So, I just thought I'd share that. The coaching side of things, yeah, it's I'm pretty lucky. You know, when you've spent your whole life, I think, you know, almost from a teenager really in rugby and then retiring and moving on, it can be a tricky period. But for me, I was presented with an opportunity to go straight into a coaching role at the international level with Japan. Under a coach named Eddie Jones, who, you know, anyone who knows rugby will know him, very experienced coach. He's known for being extremely demanding on his players and coaches, you know, with quite a high turnover of coaches. So I thought, fuck, if I'm going to do an apprenticeship, you know, coaching, this would be the best guy to do it under. And so for me, it's been awesome, man. It's, you know, look, I've only been doing it for two months, but I find it extremely rewarding. The focus isn't on me anymore. It's on the players. You know, it's all about them. So how I can help prepare them, any little bits of gold that I can draw from my career to help, and also to help prepare them to perform, I think is something that, you know, without knowing it, I've always been passionate about. So, yeah, I'm very happy that I've, you know, had something I could just jump into straight away and not have to think about, you know, the fact that my career that I started from a 19-year-old is over.
No, I think that's a rough transition for, I mean, again, you brought up Victorian Cross winner, same thing. When you transition out and that period's over, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It sucks, man. The one thing you've known all your life, it doesn't come to an end, but life changes. Beyond the technical and tactical side of rugby, I know you've got, you know, you're working with John Wellborn, the Power Athlete. Are you also training the rugby players on the team in terms of powerlifting, strength and conditioning?
Yeah, well, that's the unique thing about the job. But basically, it actually started from, I had a chat to my agent. He's like, well, what are you going to do? You know, he actually said to me, are you going to think about retiring soon? Maybe he was putting the writing on the wall for me. But I said, he asked me if I was keen to get into coaching. And I said, not in the normal capacity, but if you could find a role where, you know, I could just look after my group, which is the front row, not only on the field, but off it, you know, in the gym, monitoring how they're preparing, you know, so like a whole, not just on the field. For me, that was important because I know that preparation has been such a huge part of my journey. And so he sent out an email, a bit of a CV really of what I can offer. And I was just lucky that this came back. So yeah, to answer your question, I'm in the front rowers in the gym. Really hard on the technical detail, doing all their micro drills so when they get on the field, they can just maximize their time and just nail the rugby stuff.
Yeah. So where are you living now, and what's the schedule like? Are you on the road to Japan every once in a while, living in Japan or back in New Zealand?
Yeah, no, I'm in. So it looks like the international season for us is from May through till mid-November. So coming near the end now, but spend 5-6 weeks in Japan and then come back to New Zealand for 2 to 3 weeks and repeat that cycle. Was it 3 or 4 times?
Yeah, brutal. That can be brutal. Is the main family in New Zealand?
It is. Yeah, I feel a bit for the kids because I told them once I'm done, you know, I'll be you know, it won't be the same cycle of travel, but it's a tough one. You know, it's, New Zealand's such a small place and it's at the bottom of the world, so the same sort of opportunity isn't there to make the same money, really, to do what I'm doing, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's a balancing act. You know, the good thing is that when I'm home for these 2-3 weeks, it's all about the kids. You know, we're up in the morning, we're going for runs, we're dropping them off at school, and you know, I put all my time into them. And then when I'm away, obviously I'm away, and you do the best you can. But one really good thing is once it finishes mid-November, I'm then home until May. So
that's pretty good.
It's tough in those periods, but at the same time, I suppose there's not a lot of people. You know, even if you're working a 9 to 5, 5-6 days a week, you know, the quality time with your kids, so you might get a couple hours at the end of the day or before school. So it's, I think there's a lot of positives to it as well. And, you know, the experience of, you know, them coming to, we'll get them to Japan, they come see some games. Well, you know, like they've traveled heaps because I've played in France, I've played in England. So they've, you know, they're 9 and 7 and they've been all around the world. So they've had some great experiences.
Yeah, the perks of the job. Yeah. Well, where can people find you? Where can people follow you? And potentially, I don't know if you have any of your programs available to the public, lifting, working out.
Yeah, so I've got some programs that I've developed with John on Power Athlete. I've got a link on my Instagram bio, Owen.Franks on Instagram. You'll find me there. A range of programs, a couple that I've used throughout my career. So if you're interested in seeing how I've trained and prepared, then jump on and have a look.
Yeah, I'm a little too broke for the rest of my life, but as a younger man, I would have probably given it a go. Well, brother, I can't thank you enough. This has been an absolute honor. We'll drop all those links within all the articles in this podcast that we host on Sports Illustrated. Again, a total honor to have you on, and it's been a joy to watch you through your career and what you've done.
The honor's mine. Thank you, Mike.
I guess that's it. We'll be back next time.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. There's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Have you or someone you know left the behavioral health field? Coming back has its benefits for you and Ohioans in need. We would love to have you back working at a community behavioral health center, and you could earn up to a $3,000 bonus. That's right, a $3,000 bonus. Visit mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback and restart your journey today. That's mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback.